We must prepare today for tomorrow, and we must continually adjust to the threat. Our existing fleet structure operates on the premise that we still live in a post-9/11 state, where NATO's flanks are secure, the Russian fleet is tied to the pier, and terrorism is our biggest problem. That is not the world of today. And so as the world changes, we must be bold, evolve, and change with it. Instead of perpetuating a structure designed to support yesterday's Joint Forces Command, we are aligning to today's threat.
Secretary of the Navy Ken Braithwaite, last week talking to a Senate subcommittee of the Armed Services Committee about the realignment, things like changing the focus from Fleet Forces to Atlantic Fleet and also reconstituting First Fleet in the Indo-Pacific region to split responsibilities over there. Joining us now, and a lot of other things, icebreakers in the Arctic to fight against the Russians, who have a massive icebreaker fleet, and we have one and one that's broken, so that's not particularly good. Matt Gaetz is our congressman of Florida Northwest District 1, and he is in D.C. this morning. Matt, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Absolutely. You sit on the Armed Services Committee in the House side. Are you confident that the military, especially the Navy and the Marines, that this pivot is right and that we're on the right track for adjusting to the current threat, Russia and China, as opposed to the terrorist threat?
That's correct. The Trump administration reset the national defense strategy, where we weren't necessarily going to focus every asset on chasing every terrorist into every cave and wherever to stand. Instead, we were going to look at our near-peer adversaries and ensure that we're able to preserve global peace by raising our game, enhancing our capabilities. And I completely agree with Secretary Braithwaite that pivot has been successful, and it's ongoing, but I think that it is a more focused foreign policy, a more realistic foreign policy, and it's not just about ships and tanks and boats. Remember, the way we've got to beat China in the 21st century is winning in quantum computing, artificial intelligence, and the new technical capabilities that will define the winner of the next century.
Oh, yeah. Let's not go down. I mean, as you say, so much to be talked about in terms of AI, not just from the social media side, but from the problem solving and computing side and hack. I mean, just there's so much to talk about. But today, there's a big vote coming up. You're going to deal with the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. The president has raised the prospect that he would veto it if there's not a repeal of Section 230 protecting social media companies. You've been opposed to it for a variety of reasons in the past. What do you think you'll do for the vote today?
I will vote against the National Defense Authorization Act today, just like I voted against it on the House floor when it was up previously. I'm doing that because there's a bipartisan group of war hawks led by Liz Cheney on the right and Representative Jason Crow on the Democratic side, and they have put barriers in the way of troop withdrawals in Afghanistan and even in Germany, if you can conceive of that. And so I don't believe that we ought to have a National Defense Authorization Act that makes it more likely that we have to stay in forever wars, even if there's a case to be made for drawdowns. So, you know, I want to see more of Northwest Florida's moms and dads back home for Christmas. I know that's a goal the president shares, and I'm not going to support legislation that makes that harder.
Speaking of funding, I guess we're going to be looking at, what, a continuing resolution to keep the government open for another week or something like that?
Yeah, this is one of the stupid features of Congress. The government always runs out of money in mid-December, and so now, rather than facing our problems head-on, we will pass a resolution to just keep the government open for another week. The reason that's important is it backs Congress up against the wall on a Christmas vacation. And what I've learned after 3 years is that Congress will vote for almost anything to get home for Christmas. So it is a measure to try to sneak programs into an omnibus bill that maybe wouldn't withstand scrutiny if given the adequate amount of time. But this is where a lot of that garbage gets packed into bills. I've never voted for one of these omnibus bills up against the Christmas break. We usually only receive the legislative text about 48 hours before being asked to vote on it. And so it's a source of great frustration that this has become the new normal. To set yourself up for a government running out of money and then to just try to get everybody to throw their hands, vote yes, and get home in time for the eggnog.
Well, I guess it's the classic problem of if there are not enough people like you who are willing to say just no, there are so many other people who put their thing in and get it passed that, you know, they like the system. I mean, systems exist for a reason, and apparently this system benefits enough politicians that they think it's worth keeping. For coronavirus, you know, somebody texted me and asked me this question, said, are members of Congress going to come back to district, or should they not stay in D.C. And keep the COVID to themselves if they've got it?
Well, I'm actually one of the few members of Congress who has supported remote voting on the Republican side, and not because of the way members can be vectors for the virus, but because I think it would be very difficult for lobbyists to have to fly all over America and not have us all centralized in one place. But look, now, I was one of the first in Congress to say, like, we would be vectors. I wore a big gas mask
right
to try to prove that point. Don't know that that was received in quite the way I intended it to be offered, but I do think we do need to be careful. I mean, you know, I apparently contracted the virus, you know, learned that when I tested positive for antibodies. I know others in the House and Senate have as well. So, look, we all need to be careful, even when we get together for Christmas. I think that, you know, we need to maintain hand washing, sanitation, distance where appropriate, just be a good deal more careful than we otherwise would, because this virus is still raging, and still the number one thing we can do is have good, you know, personal hygiene, personal behavior, and you know, if you're likely to be around people who are a little bit older or have commingling morbidities and diseases, to be extra careful.
Absolutely. We're talking to Matt Gaetz, our congressman for Northwest Florida District 1. By the way, I love your idea of making the lobbyists pay to travel around to come to you. It's like an indirect tax on lobbyists, and I would love to see that happen. Now, Congressman Gaetz, you raised eyebrows with some, not with me. I was not surprised by this vote at all, but you were one of, what, five Republicans to vote for the decriminalization of marijuana at the federal level, which the House passed last week, right?
That's correct. The federal government has lied to our country for a generation about marijuana, and I've also seen as a state legislator that states are actually developing programs to meet the needs of their people. Now, some states have done that right, like I think Florida has, and some have done it a little more quirky, but all in all, our federalist system promises that people will try different things, best practices will emerge, and they'll be copied, and it's just ludicrous that the federal government holds a patent on cannabis and marijuana and then says it has no medical value and that it's illegal. So that bill wasn't perfect. It might not be exactly the way I would design it, but something that devolves power to the states and the people is in line with my view of constitutional governance.
And just to make a side note on all of that, a bill sponsored, if I'm not mistaken, by House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler, with whom you almost never find common cause, but this is one of the things that, you know, I've noticed about you, is you're willing to make common cause with anybody if the issues align properly. Hey, I know people would be angry at me if I didn't ask you about the election, because it's hard to track all of the lawsuits. It's hard to figure out who's really telling the truth about what to expect. You are much closer to this, and you've been working on a lot of this stuff with the president's campaign. What is your sense of where things are? And maybe just, I mean, give people kind of a, here's Matt Gaetz's take on how the election is going.
Sure. I mean, there is a period of time between Election Day and the certification of the Electoral College where we resolve these disputes. Some are resolved in the courthouse. Some are resolved in legislative houses. Some even get resolved on the floor of the House of Representatives. And I suspect when all that's done, we'll have an orderly process and a result that we're able to then move together on. But, you know, the folks who in the media who say, like, this is an attack on democracy, this erodes all of our confidence, they must forget that in 2004, when George Bush beat John Kerry, I mean, this is exactly what happened. The legislative chambers literally retired for debate to determine whether or not to certify Ohio's electors or to object to those electors in 2004. And then again in 2016, when President Trump won the election, you know, Maxine Waters and other Democrats were trying to reject those electors. So this is not an abnormal process. Matter of fact, I think it was only President Obama's elections that didn't result in some debate. And I think that if in the Congress we have to take, you know, 2, 5, 10 hours and debate why signature matches were summarily, denied, or they didn't happen in Georgia. Why in Pennsylvania there were irregularities with voter registration? Why in Michigan there are certain batches of votes that came in at odd hours that gave Joe Biden margins that would make Bashar al-Assad blush? Like, I think those are all reasonable things to debate and discuss. And then at the end, we'll have a vote, electors will be accepted, and our country will move on, and the union will hold.
Very good. Matt Gaetz is our congressman for Northwest Florida District 1. Matt, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you, Andrew.